Welcome to Product Design Bits. This is an event series brought to you by the product design team at Datadog, where we share insights on how, why, and for whom we build products alongside an invited guest. On this episode, we talk about an individual contributor role versus a manager role with Rafael Pinto, product design manager at Datadog, and Marion Dumont, senior product designer at Allen. Marion Dumont is a senior product designer at Allen, where she has been for 4 years. She was key in growing the team from 3 to about 15 designers and spearheaded the user research practice and team. Before Allen, she led the UX design team at Dailymotion, where she discovered the strengths of having a multicultural team and the challenges of an international product. She shares her passion for understanding the relationships between humans, technology, and society on NowTech, a YouTube and Twitch channel. Welcome to Product Design Bits, Marion.
Thank you, Tuda. Happy to be here.
I am just as equally happy to be here because I know that this dual role of ICN manager is something that you really care about. And we've spoken about this many, many times. So very happy to share for you to share your expertise with us today.
Thank you.
Next up, I'd like to introduce a dear colleague of mine. Rafael Pinto joined Datadog over 2 years ago and is now a product design manager. He leads the cloud security management design team, focused on scaling the team and delivering new security features. With a proven ability to adapt quickly, Rafael has worked in a variety of environments, from startups to large-scale companies. He is based in Amsterdam and has a passion for new technology, video games, and sci-fi literature. Welcome to Product Design Bits, Rafael.
Thanks, Tuda. Thank you for having me today and giving me the opportunity to talk about a manager and IC role here.
Of course. When you joined Datadog, I had already been with the company for about a year. It's been wonderful to see your career progress.
Exactly. Thanks for mentoring me into this manager role. I know we had a lot of interesting discussions about, you know, the early days of being a manager. So thanks again.
It's been a pleasure, really, truly. All right. So let's start off with a little bit of introduction. And Rafael, Marion, could you share with us more about your current roles at Allen and Datadog?
As you said, I joined Allen as a second product designer of the team in 2018. So it's been a while now. And at the time we were like 50 people. Like it was a small team. At the time I worked on health insurance topics for companies and their employees covered by Allen on health insurance. And today we are more than 500 people overall at Allen across 3 countries. And so I'm a product designer for health related services for members. I'm also leading a group of about two and three designers, and I'm also coaching 3 other designers. So that's about what I'm doing right now at Allen.
On my side, I joined Datadog two and a half years ago. And I joined on the early days of security products at Datadog. So at the time, it was only one security offering with one dedicated team. And since our team grew quite a lot, and naturally the design team grew as well. And that's when I had the opportunity to become one of the first managers on the security design team. Today, I'm managing a team of 3 designers on cloud security management, which is one of the 3 different security products that we have today at Datadog. And we work alongside like maybe 10 other designers within the security space and much more designers within Datadog. So my role is really caring for this team, so these 3 direct reports, and that's what I'm going to talk about today.
As you mentioned, you both wear this dual hat, where Rafael, you are officially a manager, but you still IC. Marion, you are more officially an IC, but you do quite mentor and oversee a lot of designers. Could you talk a little bit about how the organizational structure at your respective companies are helping shape this dual role that you have?
Yeah, it really depends of the company, to be honest. And at Alan, actually more than the organizational structure, it starts with the culture of the company. And the pillars of the culture of Alan are about like transparency, written first, where everybody has access to any type of information in the company or the decisions that are being made and how they are being made, because it's written first, and also about distributed ownership. And that's what this distributed ownership principle allows us to not have a manager, as we distribute responsibility among different people in the team, actually. So it means that everybody can be proactive and honor their priorities. Everybody can contribute to the strategy of the company. Everybody is welcome to test new things and be bold and like sometimes fail and learn from it. So this approach really helped us move fast. People don't stay stuck in their titles because there are actually no titles of manager. So that's the thing. And for example, to share maybe a personal story, a few months after joining Alan, January maybe 2019 at the time, I took ownership of kickstarting the user research hiring and practice. And I didn't need to have a mandate for it. The team aligned on the need, on the problem for the company. And so that's how we prioritize together. And so because I was really interested in this expertise, I always loved user research. I love to practice user research when I can. And so I raised my hand. I said, okay, I'm happy to own it. It doesn't mean that I did everything on my own, but I own the initiative and I asked help when I needed some. So it's how it works, like really empowering people to take ownership on initiatives. And on the day to day, designers are embedded in small multidisciplinary teams that we call crew. It's like what we know as squad, for example. And they work on a high level problem. Also, like the culture is influencing us a lot, but also after the culture, you have of course the evolution of the company itself. As Raphael mentioned, since the moment he joined Datadog, the team grew quite a bit, and it's the same at Alan. The product team and the design team grew a lot in 4 years or in 5 years, and new needs appeared. And so, at some point, maybe like 2 years after I joined the company, we were starting to have like quite a product and design team there. And we faced some problem and some needs, like enable the product organization to scale. Some crews didn't need a full designer, for example. So it was becoming a problem to staff people in a relevant way on some crews. We needed also to create the right environment for confirmed engineer designer to thrive. We started only with senior designers because it was easier to move fast and to be very autonomous. But after, it was more interesting to welcome more junior and confirmed designer to have like more creativity also. And also we needed to share knowledge and context to maintain a shared design vision. It's easy when you're the only designer. Three is manageable. When you become like 5, 6, it's not manageable if you don't put in place some method, tools, and processes to nurture that. And because of the difference of seniority, of course, we needed to balance seniority and expertise in the team. So that's when we split a little bit the design team in smaller design teams that we call pods. So it's small groups of designers working on very similar scopes or close scope that we call pod. And for example, I'm leading today the health pod. So as I said, right now, I balance really my time between clarifying the strategy and priorities, tackling ambiguous and complex problems, and providing the right environment and support to other designers.
So on the Datadog side, we support two paths for growth for designers. We recognize these two individual paths, so the expertise and the management. And we are also empowering people to try. So we believe that the career is not necessarily like only going up one path and, you know, it start to become like a ladder of expertise. We believe like someone might want to experience management for a while and then go back to IC work. And that's what we call career lattice. It empowers people to try management, be exposed and experience management through mentoring, you can be a senior, for instance, and start to have direct reports to, you know, get a feel of what management is going to be. And if it's for you, we believe in trying and see if it's a fit to the role or not. So we give this time of exposure to the role and experience in management. If it's a fit, the people would pursue, you know, the management path. And if it's not, they always can go back to a senior and the expertise path where there are more like individual contributors. So this back and forth between management and IC roles allows people to experiment both and also help us to have the dual approach of both being an IC, I'm a senior, and having management responsibilities. I'm, you know, managing one or more direct reports. On Datadog context, so we know it's a very fast-paced environment with a lot of projects going on. It's also a fast-growing company. We have a lot of new joiners in the team. So we are not necessarily organized in tribes, but we have product teams that are very tied to the different product areas in Datadog. And for instance, security is a very fast growing topic at Datadog. We've been hiring quite a lot recently. So we have a lot of, you know, new joiners in the team. So to support the growth and give them space to kind of get up to speed with the product, the knowledge and Datadog's way of working, I often have to intervene and do some IC work to support the heavy workload and give them the space to evolve. So that's, I think, where Datadog structure helps, you know, having this dual role, but also the context of the company put us in the shoes of, you know, I'm not only managing, I also have to provide more support to my team by doing work alongside them.
And so in your opinion, then an experience, what are the main differences between a management career path and an IC path?
In my point of view, the IC is really the hands-on keyboards. They are responsible for delivering high quality work within, you know, ambiguous projects. They have the craft knowledge. They have the product expertise. They build up domain knowledge. They also start to have some kind of cross-functional leadership, meaning like, they're responsible for building these connections with other teams, engineering, product management on their projects. The manager, I think, is acting on another scope. It's ensuring the product quality and delivery of the team through ensuring team growth. And this can take several aspects. The first one is mentoring people. It's like identifying areas of opportunities within the team where one more senior designer could mentor another designer. The other aspect I'd say is career growth. So as a manager, I'm also responsible to ensure opportunities. So we are very keen on the 3E framework at Datadog. Through this 3E framework, we try to identify opportunities within the team, projects, mentoring opportunities, project that will make them scale up on some skills they want to grow on. And the other one is workload management. So for me, it's really like defining the right priorities for the team, defining their focus, making sure they're working on the right things and making sure to prioritize the work accordingly to the business need as well. In the end, I'd say like the main difference as well for me as a manager is that moving from an IC to a manager role, it allowed me to have a different scope. So I shift from a product direct focus to a more like a platform level focus where I try to make sure that my team has the right context to make informed decisions. So it's a lot of thinking with other product leaders in the team, making sure to have visibility and give visibility to other on the projects within my team. The main difference from a manager to an IC is also the sphere of influence. So as a manager, my influence extends to more teams within the Datadog. At the beginning, it was really between cross functions within one product. So influencing the product team, the engineering team within the product. And now I have this role as well through more product than my own. So not only security, but also other products within the Datadog. And I'm still responsible for building strong relationships with the engineering and the PMs to ensure that our team is, you know, delivering within their cycles and make sure that we have a voice to the chapter as well. Like the design is also on the agenda where when we prioritize work within the quarters, during the quarters, etc. And all of that is possible and is really is by my prior experience as an IC within the same company. I'm not saying you need to be an IC in the same company to be successful as a manager doing IC work. But where it helps is that there's a lot of product knowledge, domain expertise I was able to build as an IC within Datadog that I'm now leveraging as a manager to make sure that I'm, you know, more efficient when providing guidance, talking to other people and trying to influence the product roadmap. So IC is really like you're focused on one project, you deliver high quality work, and manager is really like trying to leverage your team growth to ensure product quality.
Yes, very, very aligned with what you just said, Raphael. You often hear people saying, oh, yes, I want to grow in management. But what is really interesting is to ask, what do they mean actually by management? Because as you said, Raphael, it encompasses a lot of different responsibilities. And so when we talked about doing this podcast about IC and management, my first question was, okay, but actually, where is coming from this word management? And so I always like to dig a little bit on etymology. I didn't know. I did some Latin in my school years, but I'm a little bit rusty. So I just looked on the internet and what I found really helped me formulate how I was thinking about it. And so it comes from the Latin manegere, which means to handle, train horses, and comes also from French manège. And so it's really derived from it. So you have this sense of training people, handling people, handling things also, and organizing stuff. And then also you have like the French ménage, which means one charge of conducting a house, to oversee things and people and accountable for the quality. So I think this is really helpful also to understand the role of a manager. There is this notion of overseeing things, overseeing people, and being accountable for the quality. And then you have also something that I really like also, is the French ménager, the word, the verb ménager, which means to use something or someone with measure in order to leverage it the best we can to preserve. And so that's what you were talking about, like, taking care of your team, making sure like collaboration is smooth, within the design team, but with other teams also and with other expertise. And so for me, manager is all of that. And you don't necessarily need to have a design team to be a manager, meaning you can already prioritize, expand your impact with other expertise until you have other designer joining the company. You can expand your impact outside just your IC scope, even without a team. So I think that's important also to keep in mind. Yeah. But to sum up, I agree with you. It's like, for me, it's really about nurturing, developing and growing the design team. And for example, at Alan, hiring is not the mandate of the manager. Okay, we don't have managers. So of course, it's not the mandate of the manager. But today, for example, I'm not tackling hiring at Alan. We have a team of designers who are willing to do so. So I trust them to own this. And if I need to give a hand, of course, I'm there. And because I have experience on interviewing candidates, etc., I will challenge sometimes, etc. And so it's really about that. It's also about enabling this design team with the right tools, methods, and collaboration when you have a team. And as I was saying, it's about defining, overseeing, and driving the design vision to inform and impact the business across teams. And this is key also. And so, yeah, for me, individual contributors work independently and do not manage other people. They do not handle other people. They go deep in their topics and expertise, and they can also expand their impact by becoming like a reference in their field inside the company and also outside the company. And that's really an opportunity where we encourage people who are really focused on their IC path to grow in. And what happens is among all those responsibility about nurturing, developing and growing the design team, defining the right tools and overseeing all the design vision, it's not the mandate of one or a few people. If some designer, maybe some more junior, some confirmed, some senior are interested in the topic, we will do what we can to empower them to own those topics. So that's what I really like at Alan is this distributed ownership part where we don't have manager and we enable anyone to take ownership and take responsibility and be accountable for that if they're interested and to help them grow progressively. So I like actually that there is not a strong line between IC and manager. It's really based on the growth path of the person and when they feel ready to move to the next step.
All right. That was a very solid introduction on your roles, your organization, but also how you see IC and management roles. And continuing, we're going to talk about your roles, but scoped to product, people, and operations, which is a typical way of breaking down management and lead roles and ICs as well. Starting off with product influence, how do you each have product design impact in your respective roles?
Product influence, I think, is on two different pillars for me, direct product influence and indirect product influence. So on the direct product influence, at Datadog, we expect manager one to see the really high quality work on that project. So that's one key area of product influence is that I'm still delivering actual product design. That's one direct influence. The other one is the vision work. So I was talking with one of my direct reports prior to the podcast, and we have this very ambiguous project with a lot of, you know, uncertainty. It's a high stake project. There's a lot of stakeholder management to do. And this report wasn't super comfortable handling all this discussion. So I dive into the topic and try to get alignment with the people working on it. So all the stakeholders trying to define and clarify a bit the vision with the leadership, to support and give maybe a clear goal to the team so they can be focused on, you know, delivering the right experience afterwards. So, that's another key area of product influence. It's like being able to, jump in, clarify the vision through discussions, workshops with, leadership and stakeholders. The other one, I think, is that's something we do quite a lot in the team is co-design sessions. So the co-design session is really like me directly designing with another designer and providing maybe a solution to a given problem space. So we like to do that because it really fosters collaboration, energy, and culture within the team. I mentioned the direct impact and now on the indirect product influence. There's a lot of coaching. So it's kind of related to the co-design sessions, but the coaching is more like being able to review design work made by the direct reports on projects. And one of my role as a manager is making sure that I take time to review these different design documents and provide comments where I see fit. Most of the time I try to be very active on, you know, design reviews sent by my team, of course, and also teams that I think are really related to my product space, trying to have influence there on, you know, decision making, providing insights on, you know, what are the needs of my specific team that might be related to a side project on the team. So we spend a lot of time reviewing projects, asking a lot of questions, you know, on why this decision was made on this specific project, etc. So that's a way to influence how my designer, how my reports see the problem. Sometimes it's easy to have one approach to a design problem and then stick to it. And through questioning, my role is maybe to help them, you know, broaden their view on the issue and explore other paths they might not have explored prior to the session. So that's how I can also have indirect influence on projects. And also, of course, the other one is mentoring as an indirect influence. As I said, direct through delivering work, actually end on keyboard work and indirect through, you know, coaching, mentoring and reviewing design documents.
I really like this way of framing your impact and product influence. So it's the same for me, like direct impact on product influence by, as Raphael, delivering on the crews I'm involved with, by contributing to the strategic discussion and to help materialize the vision, and indirect by translating this vision for other designers, spreading it in the pod, in my small team of designers, so they can make it their own and also spread it themselves in their different projects, through coaching three designers, by sharing feedback, because the feedback is better given when it's the right time, when it's happening, when something that requires feedback happened. So let's not wait reviews or performance discussion to discuss feedback. It's already too late. Trying to help them act on this feedback, because it's not always easy to understand how to act on it, through pairings. So for pairings, what I like, but I know also we will discuss about it, I think later, is make space for it, because it's been a while that has been, I have been at Alan, and some maybe, like more recent designer do not always dare to ask me to do pairings. So what I did is I opened three slots in my calendar every week on Monday, Wednesday and Friday, which really states open pairing. Like this time is open for anybody, and I can have like PM, designers, UX researcher, like user researcher, booking this slot. It's for the team. So I'm available and making my time available, to just, think together about a problem, a project, something they are stuck on or they would like to pair on, because sometimes just having two brains is easier to kickstart also, and to have a different perspective. And also what we did in the small design team, I lead is, we have two moments where we meet, every week. Is one where we discuss about our own objectives and priorities for the week, just to make sure everybody is very clear on that and they were able to define themselves what will be their top priorities of the week. If not, I will be there, of course, to support, and maybe support in terms of resources. It can happen also in terms of bandwidth. Sometimes we need to have this discussion. And we have another moment in the week, which is really dedicated to pairing. And it doesn't mean that we pair every week, but we have this time planned for it. And on the morning, we ask, hey, does someone have something to pair on? And usually, most of the week, there is something that comes up. So it really helps. Instead of waiting someone to ask to pair, which requires from them to feel comfortable enough to raise their hand. And when you're like just joining a new company, it's not always easy also when you're super familiar with your colleagues. That's basically really similar to what Raphael mentioned. And one example maybe of a project I was involved in the beginning of the year was to define how to be a health partner for our members covered with Alan, because that's one part of our vision. And basically we were at a cross point, and we need to understand where we were standing today and where we wanted to be, and understand what were the steps and blockers to reach that goal. So in order to align everybody and to have this open thinking, I organized a little workshop for 3 days, highly inspired by the sprint methodology. So nothing very, very new, but you have a lot of good exercise and tips in that. And so we gathered in one room, and it allowed us to first gather everybody, which was a new team, so to bond together and to feel comfortable brainstorming together and to move really fast on those topics, because people are really uncomfortable in uncertainty and ambiguous context. So we really needed to move fast and uncover the top blockers to reach that vision. And then after this workshop, what we did is I worked in parallel with the crew, so the multidisciplinary team I was working with engineers, product manager, user researcher, etc., and also the design pod I was leading, to make that vision tangible and be able to communicate it across the company, across other teams and aligned stakeholders. Because the impact of that project was like spreading all over the company. So it was really, really important to get the buy-in from designers, from everybody in the company. And then what happens is each crew was able to organize themselves and define their objectives to reach that vision. So again, distributed ownership here. And the design pod role is to support each designer in their initiative, nurture common knowledge. So we move all in the same direction. So that's basically how we work. And after like aligning on the direction, like designer were really, really autonomous on this. So it was great to see the best achievement here.
Really like how you think about product influence and like Raphael was mentioning also, and you too, Marion, the direct and indirect aspect of it. And I see that at the end of the day, there is actually a lot of content switching in your blended roles. So I'm wondering if you have any tips on how to effectively switch between your two roles. And at the end of the day, it is about also meeting deadlines and expectations of your product teams, right? So how do you do that?
So the key is, for me, at least I would say, is to have visibility on your objectives and priorities at any moment. It's helpful when you're spread across multiple topics, as you were saying, and it makes it easier also to communicate with your different teams on deadlines. The key also is, being very clear with your objectives and being able to manage expectation from your different teams you are working with. If you don't manage expectation, people won't understand why you're not delivering on the deadlines they assumed you would deliver on. So managing expectation deadlines is super key. And you cannot communicate on those deadlines if you're not clear on your objectives and priorities. So both are really, really key, to good collaboration. Personally, I use Notion because we use Notion for sharing the common knowledge in the company. And so instead of adding a new tool, I relied on Notion. So I have a Notion board and some, little workflows optimization in, my web browser in GitHub because we use GitHub to make decisions on projects and on Slack also. So I have these little workflows and it means that I can add any new objectives or new priorities that comes up to this Notion board. And I can put like a team to which it's attached, a deadline, etc. And so in that board, I will be able to see, okay, what is to be tackled on this sprint? What I need to focus on and not forget about the next one that are planned further away. So it really, really helps me. I have this, this board always open. It's like a pinned tab for me. And it really helps me every day, to be honest. And then the other tip that is critical for me is to organize my calendar. I need to optimize my time and again, provide visibility to my team. So I will identify which time of the day I'm the most focused. For me, it's really the morning. So what I do is I block this time to think about deep topics. I have like a focused time when I can on most mornings, not all mornings, but most mornings. And also I have those availability time for my teammates. So I make myself available through open pairing slots, 3 times a week, 1 hour for each. And it's really time for my team. I also make time for my pod thinking, my pod pairing, as I was saying. We have 2 moments in the week where we meet with each other. So again, it's in my calendar. And then I have my coaching session and I always make sure to have time before and after to prepare my session. I prepare my coaching session the day before to have time to think about it, mature a little bit compared to the previous session. And then I have always like minimum 15 minutes after a coaching session, at best 30 minutes, to be able to take notes, to not forget about what we talked about, what I need to be careful of for the next time, objectives or priorities we align to tackle or come back to in the next session. It's really, really important to also for the coaches to help them be accountable on those. If you do it, they will do it. So you need to give the example here. And of course, like organizing this calendar like this, it's easy because to be honest, we do not work with meetings. So what you hear was about pairings, coaching session, etc. But I have very little meetings through my week. So it allows me to really have those focus times that are critical to be able to think on deeper problematics.
No meetings. It's sounds really nice. On our side at Datadog and within my team, we start by aligning on those objectives and these expectations at the beginning of each quarter. So we have these OKRs each quarter where we define like key objectives, key results to meet for our product team. I try to influence and push for maybe the design agenda and make sure that we don't over prioritize, you know, new features, et cetera, over UX, UX experience, improving UX flows, improving the existing set of features. So within this OKR time, we identified the key objectives, and it's, as Marion said, it's really key to understand the tenets of the each objective to make sure that you have clarity on what's expected, and also a good sense of priority. And priority is, it's all about, you know, timelines. When are we expecting to start work on it? So when do we need to deliver it? What are the other teams depending on my team work? Am I, you know, having time to do the full design process, or am I having like a shorter period of time where we need to progress quickly because there's another team depending on us, and their work might take a little longer than ours. That's all the OKR objectives. Then I have a clear objective for my team. I also have a clear objective for me, and we track that using Jira. So oftentimes Jira and designers, it doesn't sound really well. It's like a very, not complex, but it can be quite complex sometimes, tool to track work. So what we did is really keep it as a very simple level. And that's also because Datadog uses Jira internally. So as a, for a Kanban tool, we needed to work with Jira. So we use the very simplest function of it. We have sprints. We are organized like the engineering and product team. We have the same cycles of work. We have a Kanban to track, you know, ongoing work, to do work and, you know, done work each week. We are not super detailed. We just keep it high level. It's mainly to provide visibility on what is the workload, what am I currently working on as an IC, what is my team currently working on, and providing this visibility to other teams as well. So we deeply use this Kanban. And that allows me as an IC to keep track of, you know, my IC work, making sure that I'm meeting expectations from the product team, and making sure that also my team has the right focus at the moment. When it comes to context switching and, you know, effectively doing so, the one key aspect I'd say, and that's an advice I give to every new joiners in my team, is really own your agenda. I've seen some designers struggle with their management of time because they were not really owning the agenda. When I say owning your agenda, it means in practical way, putting big block of focus time. And the focus time allows you to really reverse the logic of the agenda and say, okay, you put blocks of focus time in your agenda and you leave some time open for people to jump in and maybe block time for meetings, etc. So you really reverse the logic of the agenda. Instead of being open to everything, you close and you really like mark areas of your day that are open for meetings, and the rest is your focus time and your honor of it. So that's the number one advice I usually give to designers in my team. Really own your focus time. We work with team across the world. So my focus time is mainly in the morning. I have, you know, big chunks of 2 hours of focus time every morning. And depending on the day, the focus would be a bit different. So usually when I start the week, it's, you know, all about going through the week, meetings, making sure that I have a clear path for the week. I clean my agenda at the very beginning of this week as well. So it's a lot of admin stuff at the beginning. Then on Tuesday, it's mostly preparing the meetings I have the next day. So I have a lot of, one-on-ones on the very specific days. One-on-ones are, you know, dedicated time I take with my direct reports to make sure that we have a weekly touch points. And this comes to my second advice. It's make sure to cluster your meetings. So the one I'm responsible of, I try to cluster them because it allows me to define kind of days of the week. You know, the Wednesday is all around talking to my reports and going through these one-on-ones, etc. So the day prior to that, the Tuesday, I'd like to take time to really prepare for the following day and make sure that, you know, I'm going through my notes, I'm going through the different action points and make sure that everything is done and make sure that I do a proper follow-up in the next meeting. So my reports feel, you know, they are actually getting things out of these meetings and making sure that, you know, I hear their topics and I'm actioning on it. So focus time, cluster meetings. And as I said, when you work with a lot of teams across the world, it's really important to make sure that you account for these time zones differences and, you know, make sure that you keep time free in the afternoon for a team working in the US, for instance. The trick is really like, do not put your focus time on the only time that these people would be able to join you. So make sure you account for that as well. And the last advice I give is try to have more and more cross-functional meetings. So try to avoid only product and design, only design and engineering meetings. Try to have the three of them into the same meeting when you're talking about a project. This avoids the parallel discussions that can happen sometimes where product will talk to engineering, product will talk to design, design will talk to engineering. And we seem to all have a shared understanding, but in the end, discussions vary. And, you know, depending on the day you had the meeting, your point of view might evolve. So the information gets a bit lost in translation. So it's really important to have these meetings all together. And it allows also to, well, instead of having three meetings, you have only one. And it's a really good medication against meeting fatigue. Because today we have a lot of team working remotely and meeting fatigue is a real issue with them today. So that's another key area I try to pay attention to is really try to foster these cross-functional meetings to avoid having tens of meetings on the very same topic, etc., but with different stakeholders within the meeting. So yeah, that's, I'd say overall, that's my advices for context switching, time management, and making sure like, you meet the deadlines with your product team.
Doesn't sound very easy, to be honest, but you all have managed to keep your workflow organized. So this is really, really great. This brings us to the next point, which is operations, something that a lot of managers and leads are expected to do. And so I'm curious to know when it comes to your role, what types of team rituals are you responsible for, if any at all?
So we are definitely responsible for building this team. At the beginning, we didn't have like a lot of rituals. We had a lot of projects outside of the team because the team was really small. So we started by having much more product team meetings. But as a team grew, we needed as well a new space for our team to exchange on, you know, the best practice, the different projects we're working on, giving visibility to other designers on some directions we're taking. And all of that within the core team I own. We are only four designers, but we need these rituals. And I think there are a lot of benefits. So one of the first meeting we started to do is it's a weekly stand-up. And what it allows us is that each week we will meet at the beginning of the week and go through the Jira Kanban that we use. And basically define, you know, what are our objectives for the week? What are the projects I'm going to work within the week? And this helps us also define areas where we could help others' opinion on from on the project. And it basically creates awareness within the team on, you know, who works on what are the challenges we're facing as a team. And it allows us to, by identifying this, create maybe new meetings on, you know, co-designing sessions within the week, a small design critique on a given day on a particular project that might, you know, unblock some designers on their topics. So my team, we have four designers, as I said. We also operate within a larger team, the security, that also operate within an even larger team, the design team. So you have three levels of teams. So this stand-up, we do it within my team. But we also keep in sync with the other teams. So we have a collab session, weekly collab session with the security team. And the goal is really here to provide visibility on the different projects we are working on and also ask for from other designers that are not part of the team. So might be a little bit less biased on the project because they have maybe less context. So they can bring maybe a fresh opinion to the table. So this weekly session happened. So this collab session happened weekly. And we have also a project sync, and the project sync is really, only, you know, providing update on the different projects we're working on. So all of these little, meetings, the clear goal on all these projects is to one, provide awareness on projects and trigger collaboration within the team. And by easing collaboration, you are also able to, you know, build stronger relationships between designers. Especially with designers working remotely, it's really important to have these rituals because it's really easy when you are in office to, you know, poke your next door designer and say, okay, I might need your help on this screen, etc. But when you're working remotely, these discussions tend to not happen. So you need to create a room for them. You need to create this weekly, you know, ceremonies where people are safe to share and can discuss on projects. Because Slack, it's not the same. It's not as efficient as a weekly meeting where you can provide this visibility. Sending a message on Slack will not have the same impact, etc. So we want to ease these things. So that's within my team. We also do like a lot of team offsites to trigger more interaction between our designers. As I said, we have a lot of remote designers, so these team offsites, they are really important for us to gather as a group in one of the offices of Datadog. Usually it's Paris because it's a closer one for all of us. And spend maybe a week all together in office to have these social interactions. This, you know, presence in office is really important as well. So take this time to walk and see each other during a week in the same space, a physical space. And we take this opportunity to basically like do a lot of workshops on ongoing projects, do whiteboarding that cannot happen. We have a lot of tools to do that, but the physical whiteboarding is still very efficient. We do that at least once per quarter or 6 months, depending on the situation. So that's overall the responsibility I have, is like to make sure that we create these spaces for the team to collaborate and give visibility on their work.
Yes, so at Alan, I'm not responsible of any rituals because we have other owners and it's perfect like that. And sometimes we change owners on different initiatives. Also, it's not final. What we have, so I can start also at my team, design team level. So the 2-3 people I'm working with the most. As I was saying before, we have like 2 weekly rituals. One where we discuss, as Raphael mentioned, with his own team, we discuss objective priorities. Is there anything blocking? Anything confusing? Is there any friction? Any problem of bandwidth also? And so we can address that. So at the end of the meeting, everybody is clear. So I said meeting, it's a sync. But at the end of this sync, everybody is very, very clear on their priorities for the week and comfortable to move forward. So that's really key. It happens usually either on Tuesday or Wednesday because our sprint or Alan week are from the Wednesday to Tuesday. So that's how we organized. And then we have like a pairing slot with this team every Thursday morning where we have this time to share, pair on a topic. Usually we focus on one topic because we want to have the right time, like enough time to discuss it, go in detail. And it's really dedicating time to the person who needs to pair on something. So it works well. what we have also, so I'm only talking about design rituals. I won't talk about like product rituals. We have at the design team, all the design team level, we have a monthly all hands dedicated to design. What happens is we nominate each month 2 to 3 people to present at this all hands. And the goal of the all hands is just to share a project you worked on, what you, how you led it, what you learned from it, what went well, what didn't went well, and how you would like to do it maybe differently next time, and like share tips on what happened also. So it provides visibility on what is happening in the company, what is happening in design, because we are growing and growing. And so sometimes it's hard to keep track of everything that is happening in the company, even if we have like other methods to be aware of product updates, etc. Here, it's really a moment where we can go in detail in the design initiative. So it's really, really interesting. It's not a moment for review, because with 15 product designers looking at you, it's not the right environment for it. So it's really not about that. It's just about sharing and asking questions to learn from each other. And then talking about reviews, there is UI reviews. So it's not in the little design team or bigger design team. It's like per project. Every designer, when working on a project and having like some mockups, new mockups, maybe new component for the design system, will ask for a UI review. We have a UI specialist. And so the goal is just to get a new pair of eye on those mockups, on those components, and to make sure like it's consistent. This new component is useful to the design system, or maybe redundant because we have something that is already existing and could be adapted. Or maybe just brainstorm a little bit and explore a little bit more on UI to make sure we keep the level high enough and the quality very high. So it's very useful also for newcomer. Because it's the perfect opportunity to ramp up on the design system and practice UI with someone else. So it's really, really helpful for us. It helped us a lot on that part. And for sharing moments also with the team, we have the design team offsite. So it's an event that happens once a year where we go in some place. So this year was Bordeaux in the southwest of France, where we all gather together. So we tend to do this with the user research team also. So it's usually designers and user researchers going in one place, and we were in Bordeaux for 3 days and just spending some like quality time with the team. So we are not doing like design workshop here because we do not have the place for this. We do not have whiteboards, or we didn't plan for it in Bordeaux actually. But we are doing like all type of activities just to bond with each other. With designers, they are not working that closely every day, just to get to know personally each other. So I love this time, to be honest. And then we have on-site, where we usually gather in Paris office, and we have like co-working space nearby also to absorb the load of people incoming in Paris. And then we have, during this on-site moment, we have moment dedicated to crew you're working with, so those multidisciplinary teams you're working with, moment with the design team also, and moment with people of other teams and expertise. So it's really... like it has different goals here. And that's a good opportunity to do some whiteboarding session, tackle design discussion a little bit in a informal way, because we have like the right rooms and tools to do so. So we do that. We do that, I would say, because we change a little bit the frequency at least twice a year, I would say. And then we have the company offsite. I swear I'm almost done. We have the company offsite where again, we gather in some place this year. I don't know why, what is happening with the southwest of France, but it was Biscarrosse. So not far from Bordeaux, but nearby a lake. And we gathered for 3 days. So 500 people almost, like it was more 400 this time, in one place. And again, we had a whole bunch of activities planned per, multidisciplinary teams and area you're working with, product area you're working with, and also activities, not activities, but time, free time where you could gather with people you wanted to meet. And so just after some activities you're interested in, like, for example, on the last day, when everybody was a little bit tired, you have like a whole range of activities you could do, like Chinese painting, you could like do Nordic walk, you could do some initiation to... I don't even know how to say it in English. Échasse-landaise, like a typical practice from the area. So you had like canoe, et cetera, et cetera. So it's really, again, about bonding time with the team. You could say you're not working during that time. So we have like support for members. We have a session for this to make sure we can provide answer and support to our members. But no, we are not actively working. We have all hands at the company level where we present the vision of the company, the latest updates, etc. But we are not actively working because it's really about bonding personally. And this time will help us have a smoother collaboration and stronger relationship with your coworkers during the rest of the year. So actually it's a really good investment for the company, for this time. And so I'm not owning any initiative because they are working very well. We have owners in the design team or in the company, for that. And it's all about distributed ownership again.
We have reached the end of our very interesting, fruitful discussion. And I'm sure everybody is very curious to know, final verdict, which path have you chosen for yourself? IC or management? What's next in the long term or the short term for you?
So on my side, I'm not choosing. As long as I can, I'm not choosing. Maybe it will change in the future if the team grows, etc. But I like this balance of this opportunity to be able to do still IC work and also to learn and support other designers, to learn from them and being able to support and share my experience and help them grow also on their path and as a designer, as a person. And I find it really, really rewarding. I'm not convinced I would be able to do this 100%. And for now it works. So let's see.
Nice. As for me, well, it's only been 1 year now in the management path. So I'm definitely foresee myself doing this for more years. As we discussed, we've seen that, you know, management skills rely heavily on IC skills, and they can even influence the way you are an IC. So although I'm not directly considering going back to IC work, I'd like to keep being a manager because I think it adds to my skill at the moment. So in terms of career growth, even for the long term, I'm pretty sure that all the skills I'm learning at the moment, being a manager, will benefit any decision I'll make in the future. Would it be going back to IC path and track, or, you know, keep pursuing the management track. It's all about learning, having more influence as well, sharpening my product vision by being a manager. So definitely at the moment, sticking to the management track and keep, you know, sharpening these skills as a manager. I think I still have a lot to learn on, you know, there's a lot of things that are really new when you're a manager, like handling tough conversations, defining career path and growth for your reports. These are all things I wasn't doing prior to being a manager. So I'd like to keep, you know, sharpening those skills before considering anything else. So yeah, for the next years, I'm pretty sure I'm going to still be a manager. But that doesn't mean in one day I won't be back to, you know, what all brought us in that room today. And I think is our passion for, you know, crafting products and, you know, being designers. So yeah, that's still on the roadmap.
I love that. And I especially love the idea of going back and forth between the roles. Manager today, IC tomorrow. Totally sounds great. Thank you so much, Raphaël and Marion, for your interesting, fruitful discussions today. And thank you especially for everything you do for the design community. Can we have a big round of applause for Marion and Raphaël?